Hi everyone, I'm Nicole and you're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam people. And it's a very special Fun Drive episode. That's right, it's that time of year again where CITR 101.9 and Discorder does our annual fundraiser. This year we are raising money for a radio transmitter, so just a really big tower. So please consider donating because radio is a really beautiful, accessible way to create content, and I would not be able to make all the content I do about disability and accessibility without CITR 101.9 FM. So please consider donating at CITR.ca/donate. There's also some fun prizes you can get if you donate a certain amount. Like if you donate enough, I think you get a lighter, and if you donate 500, you get an engraved bathrobe or a monogram bathrobe. And yeah, there's a lot of really cool prizes. So take a look. Take a look, because I think that radio transmitters are cool or something. Anyways, today's episode is going to be talking about dating with a mental illness. And I feel like that's fitting just because it is February, and February is the month of love. And I really kind of want to emphasize that it's the month of love, not necessarily the month of romance, and love can be many different things. And today I'm bringing on someone that I love dearly. Ah, he just had a reaction that none of you can see. This is my friend Dan. Say hi, Dan.
Hello.
You said hello, not hi.
Sorry. One more time. Can we start again?
Say hello, Dan.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dan.
This is my friend Dan. Dan, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I did engineering back in Ontario for a while, and I started my master's of architecture out here at UBC about a year and a half ago. And Nicole and I have been friends for not that long, like only like 3 or 4 months, but
God, it's felt like forever. I can't get this guy to leave me alone. He's basically harassed me to come on. I'm kidding.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, Dan is doing his master's in architecture, which is super cool. He's gonna make cool buildings.
Hopefully.
Yeah, or bus stops or something. I don't know.
Definitely some cool bus
stops. I've learned that architecture is a really broad, like,
we're gonna get into this.
A little bit. It's just really broad. Like, you can do a lot with architecture. And I just thought it was exclusively buildings.
No, it's like a lot of it, like, space design. Yeah. So all the way up from urban space all the way down to a backyard shed or something. There's lots of different scales that it works at. I really like public space and recreational spaces. And I've really started to get into housing on a smaller scale as well in the last couple
months.
What
are your thoughts on tiny houses?
I think it depends. That's a very engineering answer. It depends. I have brought that into my architecture studies.
Yeah, I think it's unique that you've got that engineering background and you're an architect. But yeah, let's get into today's topic, which is dating when you're mentally ill, which it doesn't necessarily apply that way. I feel like everyone will face some challenges while dating, and if you think about it like a spectrum, people that are mentally ill sometimes fall into the very extreme end of that spectrum of difficulty, but everyone can benefit from thinking about the way we date. So I've got some stuff going on. I don't know. I feel like I've been diagnosed with everything under the sun. As we all know, mental illness is so abstract, and it's like really easy to misdiagnose because there's so many crossovers. And we'll talk about why I may choose to not identify as mentally ill when many psychiatrists may choose to identify me as mentally ill in an episode a few weeks from now, about mental health and language. But yeah, I've got some stuff. I've got a lot of anxiety. I sometimes get depressed. I ruminate a lot. And those things have definitely followed me into my love life and my dating life. And Dan has taken the brunt of all of my rants more recently.
Yeah, we end up chatting a lot about how you've been doing and also how I've been doing.
Yeah, it's not all about Nicole. It's not the Nicole show. I actually well, like, realized kind of is
the Nicole show.
No, so. It's not. It's the it's all access pass. Come on, Dan, get with it.
Sorry.
But I kind of like, oh man, that's something I realized. I had been like crisis texting Dan for the past 6 business days, and at some point I was like, whoa, like I should maybe care about the things he's doing in his life. So I was like, oh Dan, how is like this architecture thing going? But anyways, I think the like hardest thing about dating as me in my personal experience is that there's this inherent feeling of being unworthy. I don't know if you relate to that. I think we all maybe feel an aspect of that. Mine's pretty extreme.
Yeah. Unworthiness. I think something that I've really struggled with in the past is not so much feeling that I can't be loved, but not recognizing that as my partner would express it. So like not feeling the love that they think that they're showing me, I guess.
Yeah. I had a friend tell me this once, and I think it still very much so rings true, is that humans are the most complicated things on the planet. Besides, I don't know, maybe space and time, but that's whatever. We're the most self-centered. And when you take two of them, you put them together, it gets infinitely more complicated. And that's a concept that makes my brain hurt. but this like feeling of not feeling worthy of love for me has really manifested in self-sabotaging relationships. And God, this is like such a broad topic that I don't even know where to start. But I think that like this place of like feeling undeserving of love is pretty common amongst a lot of people that date that are mentally ill. It's the issue with a lot of mental illness is that it stems from this like lack of self-worth for whatever reason, and being loved by someone shockingly does not make you feel self-worth.
And it also shouldn't inherently source of that self-worth either.
No, it's this like concept that like, and I was listening to this audiobook today by John Moe. His wife is named Jill and John and Jill. But he talked about how there's this concept that a lot of depressed people have. You feel like you can achieve your way out of anything, or if you like have this one thing, then like you'll be happy. And like, you're like, oh, like once I finish this degree, I'll be happy. Or like once I like find the love of my life, I'll be happy. And some rich people are like, oh, like once I get a private jet, I don't have to deal with all this commercial stuff, I'll be happy. Which is like, you see like the levels, like they don't end.
Yeah.
And I think for myself, I really do resonate with this. Like I've felt this subconscious and conscious feeling of not being worthy of love and not having a sense of self-worth. And I've always like kind of told myself, well, once you find someone who dates you, there's some empirical evidence that you are being loved. Ergo, you are worthy of something.
Yeah.
And that's been a very difficult lesson for myself to learn time and time again, is that that's not how it works.
Yeah. One of the things that similarly that I've struggled with is less about not feeling deserving of love, but more so trying to love my way out of problems and issues.
That's another favorite quote of mine, is love is important, but so is logic.
So are logistics.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's something that I would sort of catch myself doing, is if there was a problem, if there was space that was necessary within a relationship, I would try to, like, I can love you hard enough to make up that distance, I guess. And that was really, really draining for me, has been in the past.
That's interesting. I feel like we're very different in that sense, where you feel distance, you run towards it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I run the opposite way.
Well, either way, though, the outcome is just more distance, because I would run closer to somebody who needed space and just push them away. Further away.
Yeah. And I don't know, Dan's not a very fast runner. That's actually not true. I think Dan is quite nimble. but yeah, I think that love is something that really terrifies me, because it's so unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And when you have all these strong feelings, often ration and logic just go out the window because you're so like, you want that feeling, that connection, you know? You feel me?
Even when it is like seemingly predictable, some things can drastically change.
Yeah.
Like it never ends up being as clear or clean as I think it, as maybe we expect it to be.
Yeah. Things are messy, and that's a really difficult thing to accept, that like nothing is ever guaranteed except for the fact that nothing is guaranteed. Retweet.
Yeah.
I think that like an issue that I really have with dating is that, one, I have this unreasonable pressure that I put on all my partners, where I'm like, yeah, they love me, so I will feel good, which is like, no, there's still so much work that I have to do to love myself and my mental health improving because of my partner is like not a thing. It might make it seem better, but at the end of the day, it's very internal and it can't be fixed by an external fix. Once again, that's a difficult lesson that I'm learning time and time again. Every time I'm like, no, this time it'll be a magical Harlequin novel romance where they will love me and everything in the world will be right and I will never have a sad thought ever again.
Yeah, one of the hardest things for me about sort of placing that pressure on a partner was I was in a very long relationship and we got engaged and basically my entire identity was nested in this relationship. And so I wasn't me, I was one half of this relationship. And so when the landscape of that relationship started to change, I was pretty lost. I really didn't know what was going on.
What's the landscape now?
The landscape is I was in a relationship for 7 years.
Yeah.
And then we got engaged. And we were engaged for about a year.
Yeah.
Or about a year and a half, and almost the entirety of that engagement, we had actually opened up our relationship into a polyamorous relationship. And that's one of those sort of components of landscape changing and redefining self and trying to recognize myself as an individual and not half of this other thing. That was a really scary window of time and a lot of change, and took a lot of work to release myself from the like confines of the definition of that relationship.
I feel like I am a very strongly individual, independent person when I'm not in a relationship. But the second I get into one, I find myself succumbing to this like, you're this other person's half and they're half of your life and you share everything. And I find that I really lose myself when I tell myself I'm not going to.
Yeah.
And I know that that is a product of like mental illness, and like all of a sudden you have this really potent connection. Potent.
I think you should hit the T.
Potent.
Yeah.
Potent connection. And then it's just so addicting and you can't help but like need it. And all of a sudden all the work you've done is to be your own person has disappeared. But on the flip side, I know that like, all the work I've done to like be my own person is largely also just avoidant behavior. So it's really just like a lot of struggle for me to strike this balance of being my own person and also learning how to be in a relationship. And I have not come close to finding that balance. And I like to think that I've gotten closer, but the reality is there's just so much more distance to travel. But it is so easy to find stability in someone when you don't feel stable in your own life.
Yeah.
It's really easy to cling on to something and believe in something blindly, which is really scary.
Yeah. And when that stability and shelter exists and you can sort of unload all of this uncomfortability into that space, as soon as it's gone or as soon as it changes a little bit, it all comes back. It definitely reminds you that like the individuality of being able to handle and deal with those things within yourself.
It really is important.
It's really important.
I used to be on this like really big kick for, I want to say, like 4 months or something, where I was like, I need to learn, or I need to realize that there's a very real possibility that I will die alone. And that sounds so depressing, and it is a little bit, but like, let me explain. It was like, there's a very real possibility I will die alone. There's a very real possibility I will never find a life partner. And there's a very real possibility I will never find someone to argue with about taxes. And
logistics.
That is like terrifying, but also very freeing at the same time, because it's given me the space to be like, okay, with this possibility that I might die alone, I need to learn how to find fulfillment in myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Otherwise, I'll just spend my entire life looking for something that is not guaranteed.
Yeah.
And like, of course, as soon as I started dating someone, that just went out the window. But I'm trying to re-emulate that. And I'm trying to not go too far into the deep end where I'm like, you know what? This is great. I'm just actually never going to seek out love and connection. But I'm trying to like find that balance and also realize that at the end of the day, I'm the only person that has to live with myself.
Yep.
Just something I hate doing. Hate it. But I'm the only person that has to live with myself, and that means I have to learn how to do it myself. I feel like I'm seeing a lot of everything and a lot of nothing at the same time, which is a lot of philosophy.
I think there's a lot there. The whole sort of doing it yourself piece, I think I can resonate with in particular. Like when my relationship opened up, that was a really scary thing. And it was also like this really fantastic thing that ended up leading to these really spectacular experiences. But I think one of the best things for me is it forced me to confront a lot of the insecurities that I had, the root of a lot of the jealousy that I had, had me dig up things from my childhood and actually talk to a therapist about them instead of like pretending like it didn't happen. And all of that, like, that difficulty did end up resulting in what ended up being a much more comfortable, I think, mature person. But
hardship usually it makes you grow or it makes you shrink. So I feel like a lot of people grow. Mm. Some shrink. I don't know. Some things just break you. Yeesh.
Yeah. And, and you don't get to control those things.
Yeah.
That's part of it. Like, I guess trying to control it might be exactly part of the problem.
I feel like I've always like had this idea that I'm like, I'm not ready. I'm not ready for a relationship. I'm not ready. I don't have all of my stuff figured out. Mm. I'm not ready to love someone. I'm not ready to be loved. And it really bothers me that there's this like, this theory that I have.
Mm.
Listen up. This theory where you will never be 100% ready, but there may be times where you're 100% not ready. And you're somewhere in between at all times, but you're never 100% ready. And sometimes you just got to chance it. And I don't like that you got to chance it. But in terms of mental illness, there have been times where I've like known I'm in a really low place in my life, and the last thing I need is to learn how to share my life with someone else. Like, I need to learn how to do it myself.
Yeah.
I need to prioritize what I need. But there are times where I'm like, I feel pretty good. I could get into this thing with someone, but I don't know.
Yeah.
What if everything falls apart next week? And a large part of why I really erred away from dating for a really long time is I felt this massive anxiety about, what if I think I'm in a good place and I get into something and it all falls apart? I can't handle that. And in fact, that exact same thing did happen to me very recently. And I'm not going to lie, it was awful. And I know it was awful because of a lot of my past experiences and past trauma all culminating in this really terrible little whirlpool. And it was a week of like not feeling too hot. Dan can confirm.
A lot of... Well, you text a lot of consecutive messages to begin with. But
I'm a texter.
It was... There were a lot of messages. There was a lot.
I should be a copywriter.
You should just start writing that book, because you'd write like 2 or 3 a year at this point.
Yeah, I'm like the Harlequin novel, but of being sad. could write about depression for days. But yeah, everything falls apart. And in those moments, it's really hard to remember that this is not forever. Mm-hmm. In classic Nicole fashion, we're going to go to ad break. BRB.
We brought in some members from CITR to name their one true love they found here.
The News Collective.
Indigenous Collective.
The Accessibility Collective.
Sports Collective.
The Music Collective.
The Intersectionality Collective.
The Arts Collective.
How did you first know you were in love?
I could always be myself.
And I learned so much.
I think what I first noticed were the free accessible trainings. But what made me fall in love was the experience.
I got to meet fellow radio nerds who were equally passionate about alternative media, and that changed my life forever.
These collectives couldn't continue without the support that CITR provides, so we invite you to donate to citr.ca/donate.
Yo, this is the boy, Jacuzzi LaFleur. You here with Crimes and Treasons Radio. Jazz Cartier, y'all know who it is. Golden Child, baby, let's get it.
What up, this is Machine Gun Kelly, and right now I am tuned in to Crimes and Treasons, goddammit.
Hey, yo, this is Isaiah Rashad.
Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy, Just Blaze.
Yo, 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 what's good, it's Bodega Bams, a.k.a. Poppy, a.k.a. Young Don Francisco.
Hey, yo, it's Baby No Money.
What's good, y'all? It's your boy, Terrell Safady.
Hey, what's up? It's Tion Kidd.
What up? This is Stango.
And this is your boy, Waldo.
And you're listening to Crimes and Treasons Radio.
Yeah, bitch.
What's up? This is Peanut Butter Wolf. You're listening to Crimes and Treason Radio.
Hello, this is Blow Fly.
Hey, this is Halo.
Hey, what's up? It's St. John, and you're not listening to Crimes and Treasons. It's lit.
Hey, y'all know who it is, man. It's your boy, Saha the Prince.
Yo, what up, though? This is Ill Tone from Blacktivity.
Yo, peace, family. It's your Guala Dizzy Rice.
Yo, this is Remy Wolf.
Hey!
Yo, what's poppin', man? It's I Am Super.
This is Jay Worthy, a.k.a. P Worthy.
Hey, yo, you already know what time it is. It's your boy, ASAP Yams, a.k.a. Yamborghini, a.k.a. Lil Newport, a.k.a. motherfucking... I got too many motherfucking aliases, but you already know what time it is. Crime and treason in this motherfucker. Shout out to these motherfuckers. They putting it down with that real trill shit.
Yo, 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 yo. It's Cam Blow Out.
Crimes and treasons. That's what we believe in while we blowing the treason.
Crooks out.
Tune in to Vancouver's Rap Radio Show every Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM.
This is Jamal Steeles from Crimes and Treasons Radio, Vancouver's Rap Radio Show. This week is Fun Drive here at CITR, the one time each year where we ask for your support to help us keep local, independent, and alternative voices on the air. If you are in a position to contribute and would like to keep dope shows like ours on the air, please visit citr.ca/donate to donate.
Hi, welcome back. It's Nicole. You're listening to All Access Pass. And it's, reminder, special Fun Drive episode. Because it's Fun Drive, and we're raising money for a radio transmitter, and you should donate at citr.ca/donate because radio's cool and should never die. Hey, Dan, welcome back.
Hey, Nicole.
So, if you're just tuning in, we've been talking for a little bit about love and dating with mental illness, and it's a very broad topic, but I think this one kind of applies to, like, everything. Let's talk about boundaries. Boundaries when you're mentally ill are really difficult. I feel like I take them as law, mm-hmm. which really stresses me out. And they're a good thing. Boundaries are necessary. But, like, once again, I feel like I over-scrutinize myself about respecting them to the T. And if I feel like I may have, like, messed it up slightly, I'm like, oh my gosh, I hate myself and I'm a bad person. And it's really easy for me to spiral. But yeah, boundaries are really important in relationships and friendships and in work relationships and in pet relationships. Don't pull your cat's tail. Not cool. Your cat doesn't like that, I promise you. But yeah.
Yeah. Boundaries for me have always been something I've struggled with because I tend to take on a lot in sort of all capacities. I can take on a lot in my like work, but also in my relationships as well. And I like to be there for my friends, but I often do that and overextend too much of myself, and I give up too much of myself in doing that, and I sort of lose myself in that space. So Nicole and I have been talking a lot in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, actually,
lots of texting.
Let's hash this out right now.
Let's hash it out.
Have I been putting too much on you? You can answer honestly on air live. No pressure.
Of course, I'm going to answer honestly. You haven't been overextending. The thing that you do consistently that on the subject of boundaries is you always ask me if I'm being too much, like if you're being too much for me, and let's air this out. I will tell you if you're being too much for me, if we're communicating, but
yeah,
I think it's
such a heartfelt moment on air right now.
Yeah. We're getting into it. I think your expectation that, you're being too much comes from other things and isn't necessarily related to the communication that we're having.
Yeah, that's an important thing is a lot of mental illness, depression especially, anxiety, is living in the future or the past. And I feel like specifically when it comes to boundaries, I'm not very good at applying the current situation. I'm very good at applying the past where I felt like I was overstepping and I felt like I was doing too much or being too much. And I'm not very good at zoning in and taking what someone is telling me at face value. Like when Dan is like, Nicole, you're not being too much. I'm like, oh, but he totally means I'm being too much because that's what I've been told in the past. But yeah, boundaries are—they're a tricky thing. They're a tricky little tricksters.
Is there a boundary that is the hardest for you?
Yeah, space.
That's mine.
Space. I either give too much or I don't give enough.
Yeah.
Like, I sometimes just disappear for weeks on end because I'm too scared to reach out and hear what someone else is going to say to me. Or I reach out incessantly because the anxiety of not knowing is like, too much for me to handle.
Yes.
Do you feel like you do both, or do you feel like you just do one?
The biggest one for me is being challenged by somebody needing space from me. And
oh yeah, do you feel rejection from that? That was a really like intense. Oh yeah, do you feel rejection?
Yes.
But yeah, no, you do feel rejection, and it's really difficult to realize it's not about you.
No, and exactly. That's exactly it.
And then I don't know if you spiral, but by realizing it's not about you, you suddenly feel narcissistic by thinking it's about you.
I think that's one of the tools that I've learned in the last year in particular.
Like, it's not about you.
And I guess like space-wise, additional context to what I was talking about before, that long-term relationship since I've been here at UBC has also been a long-distance one, or was also a long-distance one. And so space was something I was constantly having to navigate, both that physical distance, but also like there was a lot of changes that were happening, and space was necessary in order to be able to grow as individuals as well. And that was a terrifying thing because I didn't know who I was anymore. I had been only in this relationship for
so long. It's like the
like
squirrel memes of them like, and their hands are going everywhere and they're like, bah, 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 if you know what I'm talking about.
I'm struggling to picture, but I think I know what you mean.
Yeah, okay, anyways. but yeah, boundaries and space are things that I personally just fall into two extremes of. And I don't know how to find the middle. How do you find the middle?
Does there have to be a middle?
I think you should always strive for the middle.
Yeah.
You don't have to find it. You just got to strive for it.
And the middle is between like being too incessant and too distant?
And yeah, I think it's about finding what's appropriate for each situation.
Yeah, maybe. You're a very logical person. I know you respect and appreciate logic.
But sometimes logic doesn't apply.
Well, that's exactly what I think is. Yeah. I think this is very much a feeling scenario, and it's confronting that difficulty with trusting if somebody is being honest in what they're telling you.
Yeah.
And if that statement of, hey, I need space, don't worry, it's not about you, or like, you got to believe that it's not about you. And that's far easier said than done.
I am often really terrified that I'm not able to stand on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously reassurance is a very important thing for all people to have, because there is no one person on the planet that can exist without some forms of reassurance. Whether it's like you fail a task and you feel like your life's falling apart and someone's like, oh, you'll be okay. Or in this specific scenario I'm going to discuss, feeling like your partner hates you and you need to be told otherwise. And it's just like it goes back to that thing where it's on the extremes and you just got to find the middle. But I'm really terrified that I will never be able to, like, you know, not need that reassurance. But at the same time, sometimes we do need that reassurance, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's entirely contextual and situational. But that you were talking about having to sort of lean on somebody.
I'm scared to lean on someone because what if one day they just dematerialize, you know, into like ash? They wither away. They have cried so many tears that they've shriveled up like a prune and just become ash or something.
Well, I mean, that probably won't happen.
But one time I texted a friend and was like, I hope I cry so much I just wither up like a raisin. And he was like, Nicole, what is wrong with you?
I was going to ask, though, if because that kind of got me thinking about love languages. And I'm curious if you
give love. I don't know.
In the same way that you receive love.
I feel like I'm way too unpredictable.
Yeah.
I feel like I specifically, there are plenty of other people like me, but I've never been able to pin down my love language of giving or receiving. And I've never quite been able to pin down my attachment style. I feel like I'm very...
You're just a moving target.
Chaotic. Chaotic?
Yes. That's
I'm very chaotic.
To describe you.
And I feel like I am partially such a logical person. And I try to theorize all these things and make sense of things. I have a lot of theories.
Yes.
I have a lot of theories.
A lot.
Because I am such a chaotic person and I want to feel grounded. And it's because I want to feel secure. And I want to feel like things make sense. And the issue with that is that nothing makes sense. And by trying to control it, you're not going to feel any more secure. You just got to like accept that things are the way they are. And that's a borderline. It's not impossible. It's just a very difficult thing to do as a mentally ill person. Because you don't think rationally sometimes. Or you do, but it's not the ration you need. I'm speaking in tongues.
Well, it's interesting because though I've had some very intense emotional experiences and extended windows of anxiousness and stress, I haven't been explicitly told, nor do I necessarily think that I myself have any mental illness.
Yeah.
But I know that there's been a lot of things that I've had to struggle and work through.
Yeah.
But I also don't get to see that lens of like struggling with that rationale. So when we have conversations,
It's very different to talk to me from like a well-adjusted person.
I'm not trying to intellectualize.
Oh, I
the
do.
Feelings that you're communicating, having. Yeah. I that was a good skill that I think I've learned is trying not to intellectualize
sometimes,
my emotions.
Yeah, like emotions just need to be. They don't need to be put in boxes and they don't need to like, you don't have to understand what any of them mean. Sometimes you can just feel, and that's not something I'm very good at. Oh my gosh, anyone listening to this is just going to be like, this girl is the most emotionally unavailable person on the planet. And at this very moment I am. At 6:34 PST
February 2nd,
2023, I am. But maybe I won't be at 6:36. I don't know.
It's a decent chance.
Boundaries.
Yeah. What were
I recently,
about?
Well, I had my whole spiral about a breakup that was more recent.
Yeah.
And I violated a few boundaries with a friend. And I feel really, really terrible about it. And part of me is very frustrated with them because I felt like I wasn't receiving the kind of compassion that I needed. And I also don't necessarily think it was productive to be like, actually, I need to be told this, be my puppet and tell me what I need to hear. Mm-hmm. But it also wasn't fair of me to continue crisis texting this person. And I have since been like, hey, I've been really unfair to you. I've been really selfish lately. I haven't been a good friend. I am sorry, because you deserve to have your boundaries respected. I'm going to take some time away to figure my stuff out. Mm. And I thought taking time was going to be like 5 days, but it was more like 14 hours. It happened a lot quicker than I expected. I'm all about efficiency. but I'm really scared to like go back to that person and talk about it, because I'm scared that what I'm going to hear is, I've also taken the time to reflect and I've decided that you've violated my boundaries too many times and I'm going to leave. I don't want to be your friend. And is it likely? No. Is it possible? Yeah. Is it likely? No.
No. There we go.
Yeah. But is like, it is a really scary thing to grapple with, and it's not helpful for myself to be like, no, it won't happen, because there is that little nagging feeling in my head where I'm like, oh, but what if? And what I've learned is sometimes you need to lean into like the worst case scenario and be like, will you survive that? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
I think still really scared to talk to this person again, though.
Well, sure. I appreciate that would be a difficult situation.
Yeah. You
crossed a boundary and don't know how they're going to react. And maybe they don't think that you have gotten past that thing that was causing those boundary breaks in the first place.
Human relationships are just so, like, squishy. I don't like how squishy they are.
Squishy's nice.
No, I don't want it.
I just think there's always space for compassion. And when it's a friend of yours, regardless of how long you've known them, I feel like they'd be on your side. And
until they're not.
Well, not with that attitude.
But at the same time, if people go their separate ways, that doesn't, this goes back to the thing. Sometimes it is about you. Sometimes you did screw up really badly, but you can't take that as like a, well, I guess I'll give up now. I'm a terrible human being. I've made one massive mistake and I'm done. Like, you take those failures and you grow with them.
It kind of reminds me of like impact versus intent.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've been trying to do last while is like try to minimize my impact so that my intent and my impact line up as much as possible. Basically, I don't want people to get upset when I didn't intend them to be, for example.
I feel like we could write a textbook.
Maybe. Probably not.
With like graphs and like
I can do the graphs.
Visuals. I'll do the graphs. On like theories of love and connection.
And without any basis.
Literally
whatsoever.
Anyone would be like, just there's no scientific backing for any of this. This is all like, do not listen to this advice.
Yeah. Sorry. So, but back to that point, I just want to finish that. It minimize my impact.
Yeah.
But also recognize somebody else's intent. So like be better at my intent and my impact matching up, but also be better at reading if somebody's meaning well, but it's not delivered very well, trying to see their intention.
What do you do if someone's impact is bad and their intent was that they weren't thinking? Do you forgive them? It's a case-by-case basis. What's the precedent?
Maybe there isn't one. No. I think, and maybe to a fault, but I sort of default to that place of compassion and trying to read their intent as much as possible.
Interesting, because I feel like this takes us right back to the start of this episode where you were like, sometimes I feel like I try to love my way.
Yes.
I think love and compassion, a lot of overlap, not the same.
Glad you cleared that up. Yeah. We'll include that in the textbook.
Yes. All compassion is from a place of love. Not all love is from a place of compassion.
All right. I'm trying to follow you. I'm trying to get the intent that you're putting down.
I think that it's interesting because I feel like you run towards compassion and I run towards precedent and empirical evidence and like writing down data points, which is like you can't quantify the human experience. No. You can try. You can fail like I have. It's my life's work. It's my life's work.
And quite many a journal full of you trying to figure it out.
Yeah, but you can't really quantify the human experience and what it means to love someone and when to know where it's they've just messed up too many times. I have to walk away. When do you know that it's over? It's not over till it's really over.
Well, that's an interesting one. I feel like maybe I've been very privileged in the loving experiences that I've had, is that they haven't sort of divulged into this place of animosity. Such as my, I'm no longer engaged, if I didn't make that clear earlier on. And that was a big change, but very much the best change. And it was a very mutual thing. And so we recognized that together. Do we have to go to ad breaks? Are we looking at
No, I'm just thinking about something.
Oh, okay. But it was...
caterpillars. The hungry, hungry caterpillar specifically. Continue.
Did you have thinking. That book as a kid?
Continue. Okay. Keep talking.
Oh, ended well because we recognized that, one, we wanted each other to be happy, and two, the lifestyles and lives that we wanted didn't line up anymore.
It's so interesting how like all of our past experiences culminate for this one next one, and it's just like you're looking at the cards you've been dealt, and you're like predicting the next card. And like you think maybe this card will be different. Maybe this card will be exactly the same. I don't know. I've got to chance it. Yeah, we do have to go to ad break. Okay. Right. We'll be right back.
She tucked her hair behind her ear, smiled, looked up, and asked if I've donated to CITR for Fund Drive yet. I hadn't, but I knew I couldn't lie to her. And then she said, well, I only talk to people who use their money to donate to community radio. So I did what any normal person in love would do, opened my computer, went to citr.ca/donate, and donated to my favorite shows on air to receive some really cool donation prizes, which she then demanded I give to her.
Is one of the donation prizes a journal?
Yeah, why?
You're probably going to want to keep that.
Hello?
Hey, I'm just gonna come out and say it. I've been meaning to tell you this. I know that we've only been hanging out for some time, but you make my world so much brighter, and I have a really big crush on you, and I think I might be in love with you.
Hey, sorry, the call keeps cutting out. Can you say that one more time?
Never mind. I'll see you in class tomorrow.
Make sure no voices get left unheard while they are talking about something they love. CITR is a place where people in the community can come together to talk about things they are passionate about. This year, CITR is raising money for a radio transmitter, which CITR cannot survive without because it literally transmits the radio. No pun intended. Help us make sure voices are being heard on the air by donating to CITR from February 2nd to 10th during the week of Fun Drive, and in return, you will receive a cool prize and will also help community radio survive and thrive.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM, and it's Fun Drive. Please go donate to our radio transmitter. Please, at citr.ca/donate, because radio is cool and it should never die. Okay, live react to this quote, Dan.
Okay.
Do you ever feel like you love too much and not enough all at once?
Oh, you texted me that.
I did.
Just a couple days ago.
I think that's like one of the most, it's definitely been said before. I definitely like read it somewhere, just rearranged
that
some
wasn't,
words.
That wasn't a you quote?
Well, I don't know. I don't remember where I read it, but I think it's genius. I think I'm a genius. I also hate myself deeply. but yeah, back to that quote.
Yes, because I know that I have very large capacity for love, but I also recognize that in that feeling that I was talking about earlier about always trying to like love my way out of scenarios or love harder to fix things. I think I also look at those feelings and like know that I love really hard, but doubt that I'm loving hard enough. Which I think is exactly the quote you just said, but I do feel that
I think
way.
It's just an interpretation of my quote. Sure. Yeah.
Sorry, yours is so pristine and perfect.
No. It's messy. A lot of things are messy, and I'm trying to organize that mess somehow, but the issue is it's a never-ending mess. You clean up the mess in one room, and you're like, great, I'm done. You go to the next room, there's another mess, and you got to clean it up. Great, it's a never-ending.
But what if it's just one big room? And I feel like mess is a very contextual thing.
I feel like the mess isn't a bad thing.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. If it's all messy, is it messy?
Oh, my God. I can't do this today. It's Thursday. I feel like, and I think one of the hardest things to do for myself is to trust myself. I often feel like I'm too much. I'm too anxious. I'm too sad. I'm too dependent. I'm too distant. I'm too many things. But at the same time, I'm not enough. I'm not loving enough. I'm not giving enough space. I'm not taking up enough room. And I feel like I flip-flop between the two, and I don't feel grounded in the way I love. And so many people have told me this, and all. I don't know. I believe it, but I don't. I do believe it. It's one of those things where you're like, yeah, sure. And then you grow up, and it happens, and you're like, whoa, they were right. Yeah. But a few people have told me, you have to learn how to be loved before you can love. And that's a really scary, scary thing. For a lot of people with emotionally unavailable parents to embrace is accepting like, hey, like I'm not the villain here.
Yeah.
I'm deserving of love. I'm allowed to feel good. I'm allowed to like myself.
I don't know if it's like a checkbox precursor though. Like I felt very I haven't felt loved, or I haven't felt as loved as I would have hoped, but I know that I was loving at the same time. And I don't know if that's the same thing.
No, I definitely feel that too. I feel like I've got this weird chip on my shoulder. It's because I can't see from other people's perspectives, and I can only see from mine.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I can see what I'm doing. I can't see it from yours. And I how do I trust that we're putting in the same amount of effort? Which is, again, quantifying things. You can't.
Oh, yeah.
It's so transactional. Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, word. Transactional.
You know me and my displeasure for transactional dynamics and relationships.
Yeah.
Let's get rid of that, please.
If I'm gonna be very
just in general.
If I'm to be quite frank, yeah. Who's Frank? I think that at this current moment in time, and I know this feeling will pass. I'm sure it will pass because love is what makes the world go round. I don't necessarily believe in it. I'm
in love?
Yeah. I feel like I don't believe that things can be healthy between two people. And I don't really believe that love is something that lasts forever. And that's true. Like, it's a very fluid, non-linear thing. And it has ups and downs. But, like, that's kind of the beauty of it is that it changes.
Do you think love is a feeling or an action? And if you think it's a feeling, do you think we can convince ourselves of that feeling?
I don't really feel anything, Dan. God, I need my therapist to come back.
The worst week.
I think love is such an abstract thing that humans have tried to pin down for centuries.
Just centuries?
I don't know. As early as the dinosaurs. The dinosaurs were just theorizing about what it means to be affectionate. But I feel like love is something that is just like something that you can't understand.
So why I try?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's, I feel like, where being mentally ill really brings in that question. It's a very nihilistic take. Yeah. If we can't understand it, why try? Why pursue it? Why not focus your efforts in things that are quantifiable and visibly collectible? And at this point in my life, I'm so scared to get hurt and do the pursuit of love and discovering what it means for me, because I'm scared that I will seek it out and I will not find anything.
Yeah.
Because it's me and I'm the problem. Which is not true. I like know it's not true, but at this current time, and I know this feeling will pass, that is what I'm really scared of.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that level of relaxation is something that's been good for me in the past year and a half or so. Is sort of doing my best to let go of trying to quantify and contextualize those feelings and more to just be. And I appreciate that that may not be an easy thing to do.
Being present is very difficult.
Yeah. Because there's a lot to take us out of that presence.
Like, once again, a lot of mental illness is being in the past or the future or just nowhere at all. And it's not really being in the present. The way I've thought about it is a lot of my anxiety is about the future. My trauma is about the past. My depression is about not being in time or space at all.
Okay.
And where I'm happiest is when I'm present. Wow, someone write that down.
this is getting recorded.
Yeah,
right?
It's getting. Okay, yeah, good. Okay, we're fine.
6:51.
I'm gonna write a great book one day.
A long book.
I'm gonna capitalize off of my sadness. That's right. But I think about the moments where I've been most present, and those are the moments I haven't felt the happiest or the saddest, but I've just felt the most like at peace.
Do you know of any particular moments?
Oh,
or
for
things
sure.
That you can do? Like, do
oh
you have,
no,
does drinking tea center you?
No.
Or soup?
No. When I think about the moments where I've been most present, they're very specific memories.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you why some memories bring me to the present more than others. There are some of them where I'm like, that one? Really? Really? Canoeing when you were 15 with your ex and his like kind of racist friends? Really? That's what centers you? But I can't control it. It just happens, you know? Human memories are a funny little thing.
Yep.
Psychology is so squishy. Everything's squishy.
You like mess, you don't like squishy?
I don't like mess, I don't like squishy. I like things that make sense. I should have been a math major.
I feel like those things make sense.
Messiness and squishiness?
Yeah.
The only thing about them that makes sense is that nothing is guaranteed. I don't like that.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm such a circular thinker. I'm like a hamster on Adderall.
You like, do spin around a little bit.
I'm like, I can go forwards or backwards, but let's try to find different ways, different directions. Like, there's no other direction. But I'm like, oh, but yeah, there totally are. God. I need to get out of my own head.
You just need to get on like a higher dimension, because you're like a three-dimensional creature on like a 2D surface.
Yeah, I often really feel like I feel way too much for this vessel, but also like not enough to fill this vessel. Mm. And I think the hardest part about being me and being mentally ill, even though I wholeheartedly reject that label from all the psychiatrists out there, except for one of them who was like, it's not your mental illness, it's just your personality disorder. That's right, it's just your personality. And I was like, you're a medical professional? Anyways, the most difficult part is like, I don't know, it's just being. Just being is so hard. And you're trying to do everything but be. You're trying to figure out what it means to be, what it feels to be, instead of just being.
Yeah.
I sound like a crazy person. I feel like I have for the past.
I don't even know what we're talking about.
Here are my tips. Pick and choose what you want to listen from someone mentally ill who is not successfully dated in a really long time. But here's what I've learned. And I think I do genuinely, wholeheartedly feel my advice is meaningful, despite empirically there being a lot of failures. That's not a laughable statement. It's true. loving or having someone else love you is not going to make you happy. What's going to make you happy is yourself.
I agree with that.
Yeah. This feels like proofs.
It can, logic. It can feel that way. Yeah. But if it's nested in the affection you receive from somebody else, things can get really bad when that affection's no longer there, if it's no longer there. But it also sort of allows us to forget to think about ourselves and how we're feeling within ourselves.
Piece of advice number two for all my mentally ill folks out there. You can't control what's about to happen. You can't control the future. And in this very moment, your relationship might be amazing. It might be terrible. And the anxiety of what's going to happen next is all consuming. I know that feeling all too well. But all you can really do is sit in it and just be like, whatever happens is going to happen and I will be okay after. It might be the most painful thing I will ever experience, but that's okay. Piece of it. So you can't control things. You kind of just have to sit in the tension, if it's good or bad tension.
But sometimes that tension can release.
Yeah.
Like a stretch.
Yeah. I feel like I haven't felt that release yet. But maybe one day. I have faith.
Let's hope.
Piece of advice number three is you will never be ready. No one will ever be ready for a relationship. It doesn't matter how well adjusted you are, because your partner will also have stuff they're dealing with. And and all you can really do is evaluate if you're willing to let yourself be loved enough to love someone else. Do you have any advice for all my mentally ill folks who want some hope? I feel like that's what I'm holding on to, is this like hope and faith that I can and will be loved one day in the way, in the specific context.
Piece of advice. I think it's always one thing that has been a pretty constant message between us in the past couple weeks is like, have you been kind to yourself today?
Yeah, Dan asks me that all the time and I get so annoyed, but I know it's so necessary. Like,
I rephrase it. Sometimes I ask you like how many dogs you saw today, or if you had soup or something.
And it's really lovely. It is so lovely. Even though in the moment I'm like, oh my God, Dan, I don't want to like myself right now. Screw off.
I know.
But it is important to appreciate yourself.
And maybe just other, maybe not advice, but one thing that I tell myself is that I know that I have a very large capacity for love, but I think a lot of people do as well. And
a lot of people are just too scared to really look at it for what it is.
Yeah.
Because they're scared they're not going to find anything on the other side.
The biggest thing, the two biggest things I learned in therapy were I need to not lose myself in the service of somebody else.
Yeah.
And to recognize that the jealousy and insecurity that I was feeling was about me and wasn't about anyone else.
Yeah. Sometimes things are about you and sometimes they aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on you to kind of evaluate.
Sure.
Yeah. Relationships are messy. Love is messy. It's squishy. It's unpredictable. It's really scary, but I think it's worth it.
Oh, yeah. We did never really talk about how love is amazing. Did
no,
we kind of only didn't. Talked about how it can be hard and challenging, but it is a very beautiful thing.
It is the best feeling in the world, second only to getting a 95 on a paper.
Just a 95? That's your threshold?
Dude, arts is hard. Anyways, thank you for listening to today's episode.
Thanks for having me.
This is CITR 101.9 FM. Donate to Fund Drive at citr.ca/donate. Dan, it was really lovely to have you on.
It was a blast.
Thank you for being you. Wink.